This is an encore interview with Helen Kramer, a psychologist, an author, and a personal change expert. This show was to help us understand some of the emotions that we go through during this season and how to direct ourselves to make them better and better. So listen, learn, and enjoy, and we'll be back next week. I hope you've had a wonderful holiday as best as we can at these very stressful times.
Hi, this is Take Charge Your Health with Corrine Frenari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye!
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corrine Frenari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information. We give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. So this is the show before Christmas, and it's a different kind of show. We're reaching into another arena. We're stepping out of our comfort zone, but we have some help here. First of all, my great supporter is Carol Peterson.
Hi, hello.
Yeah, she's here with us as she is every week. So because it's such an emotional time, the holidays, what it means, the end of another year, the beginning of another year, families coming together positively or not, and lots of food and darker days and et cetera, et cetera. It goes on and on, shorter days, colder weather, being forced a little bit more inside, a little more. Winter is almost like introspection, and summer is closer to extroversion. And so we're going into our deep introspection time. I looked at one of our older shows that came right before Christmas with a psychologist, and this was done about 5 years ago. It was at the beginning of the understanding of the physiology of emotion. So this is a historical perspective looking at emotion, where it comes from, and how to be able to control it to your benefit.
I'd like to talk for a minute about Dr. Candace Pert, who wrote a book, Molecules of Emotion.
Yes.
First scientist to actually identify that emotions turn into real physical molecules
that are measurable.
Yes, and they affect your neurotransmitters and receptors. So when you get an effect from an emotion in your body, realize that this is real. True physiology and biochemistry. This is not your imagination that you can be affected so much by this. And then there's the issue of change. Your body needs change. You can't experience happiness if you haven't experienced sadness, to contrast. We're creatures of change and we're subject to different challenges, and it's healthy for our body to have this. The enemy of good health and good emotional health is a flat emotional state.
And now we've expanded upon this hypothesis even greater, because we know we can create emotion with hormones. We can create emotion with chemicals. We can change our hormones with food. So we have full circles on on our mental affect. I was just reading a study this week, Carol, showing that our microbiome, the bacteria and in our intestines, can be directly linked to mood and affect, depression and happiness.
Oh, why not? It's 90% of who we are. We should appreciate that.
Duh. So
no wonder food affects us.
So what we're going into is a very high food time and very rich. These are not foods we usually eat. So just like alcohol can trigger our emotion, so can food. So don't forget that. When we're there, when we're in these situations, you know, they're a very interesting situation. The holidays are a mix of elation and almost like a loss. There's a loss of innocence. There's many times a loss of dear and treasured family members. So you're combining these two, elation and loss. You're in a situation with very often alcohol and foods. Both of those are emotion triggers. And then you're around people that can even trigger it more, which often is our family. I heard this song the other day by Kacey Musgrave, and they talk about family is family in church or in prison. You get what you get, and you don't get to pick them. They might smoke like chimneys, but they'll give you their kidneys. Yeah, friends come in handy, but family is family, and it goes on and on. So we're going to go into this next segment with Helen Kramer, psychologist, personal change facilitator, and author. Enjoy, and we'll be back right at the end. So, welcome back, and here we are again. It's the ending of another year, a very powerful one, a very charged one, with tremendous energy, tremendous change, the potential for even more. This is also a time of high emotion, some of it almost a rewind from our youth. So we want to look at that and see what we can do to move through this time with ease and extract the pleasure that we can and move into our next year in a very positive space, able to create what we want in our life. So Carol, my co-host, is here with us. Carol, welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm excited to be here. I think this is going to be a very intriguing show today.
Yeah, it's all about empowerment. That's what it's all about. It's about empowerment and getting is sometimes, Carol, sometimes I see people that they're like, you know, I'm so visual. They're like a record that's stuck in a groove. They get stuck within they leave a bad relationship, and then you look at them and they're creating the same relationship again. They leave a bad situation because it's intolerable, and you look around and they've created a very similar situation again. So who better to talk about this and help us figure our way through some of these challenges than Helen Kramer? Helen has been with us before, and we've had some powerful end of the year shows, which I've gotten tremendous feedback with. She is a very dear friend and a renowned psychologist and personal change advocate. She's an author of the book Emotional Dyslexia, Releasing the Adult Within. And Helen, I would love your input on some of the questions I brought up. Welcome.
It's such a pleasure to be back and also to be joined by Carol. We haven't spoken to each other in so many years, so it's a nice reunion. So much of what you said stimulated thoughts for me. When you were talking about a replay and being stuck in a groove, it's actually a physical problem and not a psychological one. And that's really been, for me, the most empowering part of my work was when I intuited, because I really didn't know anything about the brain, but I intuited actually in the late 1980s that when I was seeing people having difficulty, that they were well-meaning people. They weren't masochists and they weren't sabotaging. I was able to observe that there was something happening in the brain that was causing what we call sort of childlike reactions, inappropriate reactions. And when I wrote my book, Liberating the Adult Within, and I called it Emotional Dyslexia, what I was intuiting was that the all of our brains and other animals are designed to have a very hair trigger quick response to danger. That's how we survive. So if you watch a nature program and you see a herd of animals and a predator comes in, they signal each other in a flash to flee. What I hypothesized was that for most of our time on the planet, man lived in mortal danger, and again, to survive had to be able to have a quick fear response. For most of us, and certainly in Western culture, we live with stress more than we live with mortal danger. But our brain hasn't evolved to distinguish between the two. So stress signals go to the fight or flight or freeze part of the brain, and we produce emotional reactions that are reflective of what happened in our childhood, because when we're born, the most powerful part of our brain is the amygdala, which is the fight, flight, or freeze part of the brain. The neocortex, where we can be creative and problem solve and feel all our resources, that doesn't fully develop until we're in our 20s. It's a slow, slow process. And the other physiological component here is that the brain is designed to conserve energy. And that means it will repeat old patterns, perceptions, emotional reactions over and over and over again, even if they're inappropriate to our current circumstances. So when you said that people create the bad relationship or an unpleasant work situation, they're not creating it because they haven't been taught to use their mind to change the way their brain works.
Well,
so their brain is just creating what it already knows.
Aren't there neural pathways? And those neural pathways have a degree of comfort with them. They're patterns that we've had. So if we have been, for whatever reason, and this is a no-fault statement, but if we have been consistently unhappy for years and years and years, when we are then surrounded by total happiness, it's almost like we don't know how to relate. We're confused by it. And our neural pathways really aren't set up to experience that level of joy. So there has to be almost a recoupling of the brain signaling to allow us to experience the joy. Is that not true?
Yeah, it is true. You know, the way I usually express it is let's say you're born into a family where people are very critical, or they're very distant. Both, you know, but if it's not ideal for the infant, it's painful. And so let's say it's having a critical parent. So in order to not feel the pain of being criticized, the child tries to push out in some way, not take it in, not let it bother them so much, or shut down and not feel. And I have a term that I use called the receptive response. If the child's life was ideal or the infant's life was ideal, and the mother was holding the baby in a warm, nurturing way, the child would be an open system and just receive that warm, loving feeling. But if you didn't have something good to receive, and your focus was shutting down to pain, when there is joy or love in your life, you don't have the neurological equipment, nor has your brain been able to make the neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine and the hormones like oxytocin that are produced when you have loving, joyous feelings. And that's what my work is about. It's teaching people how to have those experiences, how to make those neurotransmitters, how to create new neural pathways for those neurotransmitters to travel on, so that, in essence, we morph into a new person.
So, Helen, you mentioned earlier that this is coming from the neocortex, which really isn't fully developed until we get to be about 20 years old. So if you have negative programming as a youngster, as a teen, you really don't even have the physical means to get yourself out of it till that point. And then how in the world are we supposed to find the means to teach us what we need to know to create those changes?
Well, this is sort of the most painful part of my life, which is that, you know, if you know child development, you know Piaget, and he wanted to see how different concepts occur in, as children mature. So for a very young child, if you're playing ball with them and you put the ball behind your back, they think it disappeared. When they get a little older, they click into what's called object constancy, and they'll look behind your back because they know that the ball didn't just evaporate. So cognitive functions mature, but emotional functions don't. So I don't call my work psychotherapy. I call it emotional education. I teach people how to mature their brain. So what's really happening is that when we're stressed, the signal is going to the amygdala, where we only have these reactive, impulsive, melodramatic reflexes, and the signal isn't even getting up to the neocortex. So what happens is that, let's say you're an infant, and there's a lot of fighting in your house, and it's really scary. And so your body starts to produce the chemicals of anxiety, the neurotransmitters, the cortisol, the adrenaline. Then as you mature and you have cognition, the brain receives those chemicals, and then you start to think, oh, that dog might bite me. I might fall there. Your brain, your thought processes are controlled by the chemicals of fear or anxiety. Then what happens is those thoughts go back and create more chemicals, and you're stuck in a loop.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Dispenza calls it an addictive loop, where the feelings produce the thoughts produce more feelings, and you're wired for anxiety. And so in the what I realized in once I realized that this was physiological and not psychological, is that what we needed to do is train people and I started with myself, I was my own guinea pig, on how to recognize when they're having a reaction that's coming from the amygdala, fight, flight, or freeze, and then how to send that same signal up to the neocortex where we can create, and create is really important, reactions that are cognitively and emotionally harmonious.
So I think we're saying very similar things, that the brain becomes wired, and also the physiology to certain emotions, that then he calls, Joe Dispenza calls, addictive. Yeah. And so what needs to happen, and it sounds very complicated and very difficult, what you're saying, what needs to happen is that there has to be a new signaling to the brain, to the neocortex. How can we phrase that in a way that helps people understand their power in this situation?
Well, it always seems complicated because we didn't learn how to do it. It wasn't part of our what I call emotional education. It's really, you know, I'm going to give you an example. When I work with parents, and if they have, they're sitting at the dinner table and their kids are talking about things that happened that day, and I say to parents, when your child tells you something that they did that was fun, or if they had a good play date with a friend or whatever, just ask them to go inside their body and feel, you know, go into that memory and feel what they feel. Children always have feelings. They'll feel warm in their belly. They'll feel excited in their chest. They always have feelings and sensations. If I ask an adult to do it, 99% of them can tell me in great detail something nice that happened, and they don't have any feeling in their body, because our culture conditions us to live in our head and not have these sensations. So when we want to change our behavior, what I discovered was that in order to stop feeling one way, you need to learn how to feel another way, and I call it replacement behavior. So if somebody is feeling very anxious and they're wired for anxiety, I might start with something really, really simple to start opening them up to a different kind of experience. I usually do a breathing exercise that lowers cortisol level, and then I'll ask a person to imagine being in nature someplace and just feel the sun on their skin. Now, that's something that almost everybody can feel when they might not be able to feel a positive memory. And as they feel that sun on their skin, they are opening themselves up and creating new neural pathways. If you practice a positive experience, the body and brain start to open up. And there's a phrase in neurobiology, which is that neurons that fire together wire together, and neurons that don't fire unwire. So what you're trying to do is take one emotion, let's say the anxiety, and help a person to see that many of their anxious reactions are irrational. You're only supposed to feel frightened when somebody has a gun to your head. If you're anxious about performance, there's no danger. You might be disappointed that you have a presentation and it doesn't go well, but you're not in danger. We're not supposed to feel fear unless we're in mortal danger. That's what the amygdala is there for. So if you train people how to feel good, then they can deal with life's frustrations and disappointments in a way that isn't stressing them all the time and causing them
to overreact. So at what age is this kind of feeling your emotions most effective? You can start it in childhood, but if you haven't had that opportunity, we can do it as adults and change our thinking or try to dismiss our negative thoughts and concentrate on the pleasant ones and concentrate on our feelings when we've had a pleasant experience. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'll give you an example that I have in my book. I had a successful entrepreneur, and she came in for a session, and she said that she and her boyfriend had been fighting all week. And I said, you know, what happened? And he was a freelance photographer, and they were supposed to go out that night. And he called, and he said, I just got a really big assignment. I've got to work. And she reacted with feelings of abandonment. And then she got really angry at him, and then, you know, and then the fighting back and forth. So when I hear the word abandonment, I know she's in the fight, flight, or freeze, or what I call often the child brain, because adults can be abandoned.
Just...
You're an adult.
I think a lot of adults think they can be abandoned. It's a problem.
Gets back to what Kareem was saying before, that the brain just re-triggers that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an example of the stress of having the day canceled triggers her to feel like a child that was endangered.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked what she felt like when she felt abandoned. She felt small and weak, and then she binged all night and felt worse. So I asked her, what did she think would have happened, and how would she have felt if she said to Mark, I'm really disappointed. I was looking forward to seeing you. And she said, well, he would have said me too, and then they would have just rescheduled. And I asked her, how do you feel when you're disappointed? Well, I feel fine. I'm, you know, just a little disappointed. No big deal. So what my whole approach has been about is to try to create this replacement behavior. What's the emotion and the thoughts in harmony that are appropriate to your being an adult in the circumstances you are right now? Because your brain will just trigger you into what it learned early in life when you were helpless, vulnerable, couldn't figure things out, couldn't take care of yourself. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Now,
and so we're...
Go on.
I was just going to say, you know, I call my work non-pathological and non-judgmental, because I feel like some of the labels we give people, like masochists and self-sabotaging, self-defeating, are what I call blaming the victim. We didn't design this brain. It's a wonderful brain, and even more wonderful if we happen to be living in mortal danger a lot. It's not designed... It's not designed for stress, but we can use our mind to teach our brain how to work differently.
So what I would like to do is, right now, is a natural break. I'd like to go to a break and then come back and discuss. I'd like to discuss these theories and how we utilize them to make this very emotional time in our life work for us. So I'm speaking with Carol Peterson, my co-host, and Helen Kramer, the author of Liberating the Adult Within, Emotional Dyslexia, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is Take Charge of Your Health. I'm Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, physician assistant, with my co-host, Carol Peterson, and we're speaking with Helen Kramer, who works as a personal change coach, a psychologist, and author. What I wanted to ask Helen at this point is, in so many cases, we don't understand our personal power to make change. We don't understand how we create our basic energy or mood or attitude relationships. We don't understand how our physiology creates our hormones. We don't really know how to work within very stressful situations. And the holidays is an interesting time because it's a time of lots of joy. And for even for those who experience the joy, there is a loss of innocence, a loss of just some of that magic that we go through. So how would you coach your patients to approach this season?
Well, I, in a way, it's the way I teach my clients to deal with life all the time. I always say that what we keep in the foreground and in the background determines our quality of life. And what's very interesting about the way the brain works and our emotional life works is that we can remember and relive the negative experiences over and over again, but again, we're not taught how to live in and relive in the positive experiences. The first step, I believe, I always work with people to do some breathing to lower their cortisol and reduce their stress. And I'm just going to say a simple breathing exercise, which is to breathe in through your nose to the count of four with your hands on your belly, filling up your belly, and exhale like you're blowing out a candle to the count of eight, and do that a few times. When I reference feeling the sun on your skin, anything that feels good to you, it could be the warm shower water on your back, but if you have any memories, and it could be playing with a pet when you were a kid, again, being someplace in nature, any memories that feel good to you, try to enter into that memory, hear the sound, I like the ocean, hear the waves lapping on the shore, smell the salt air, feel the sun on my skin. Learn how to open up and create the neural pathways and neurotransmitters and hormones for peace, for pleasure, for joy. I always say that in real estate, the motto is location, location, location. In this brain rewiring and the change process, it's repetition, repetition, repetition. Your brain will learn the pattern that you practice. And there's a wonderful book called The Brain That Changes Itself, and they talk about a discovery about the brain, which is that they were studying how the brain works and they wanted to know what part of the brain is responsible for finger movement. So they could see in the brain, pianists, there was an area that had more activity and more neural connections. And to make a long story short, they actually asked people just to pretend to play the piano. They didn't move their fingers at all. And that part of the brain grew bigger. So now we know that the brain doesn't know the difference between fantasizing, visualizing, and actually doing it. So if you do a visualization and you use your senses, and then you're creating the dopamine, and then you're creating the serotonin or the endorphins or the oxytocin, which is the bonding hormone, your brain will learn that new experience through the visualization as well as it would as if it was actually happening, which is very, very empowering.
I understand that what you're saying can really
induce your production of oxytocin, which in turn minimizes the cortisol. But isn't this pathway a little bit different in women as in men? Like, I was listening to you, and I was imagining myself in a bubble bath and feeling really warm and comfortable and reducing my stress that way, and I was thinking oxytocin production. But that same thing isn't usually what men want to do.
No, but I work with men all the time. The sun on their skin works for men.
Okay.
And being in nature.
All right.
You know, so and we're all very different, but the male nervous system and brain have the same capacity to experience positive emotions and thoughts. So, and another, again, what I was saying, foreground, background, another good exercise is to write down the things that you're grateful for, and then let yourself feel what it's like to feel grateful, or the things in your life that you appreciate. They don't have to be big things.
I do that with my patients. I have them write down what they're grateful for. Specifically, I love it morning and night, but I particularly want it before bed. So it repeats and repeats and repeats in their brain. And I say, sometimes it's hard. Maybe it's just that there was sunshine today, or maybe it's that you've got a warm bed to sleep in, or maybe it can be as small as anything, but just that sense of gratefulness. And then as time goes on and they continue to write this, and it gets larger and larger for people in their lives, for an encounter at a laundry when someone was very nice to them, for and their life gets broader and broader and broader, with an awareness of their appreciation of the life. And it's a beautiful thing to do, a I am grateful for list, and particularly before you go to bed, because the last things you think about at night before you go to sleep, your body works on, and it continually works on. So if you're watching the news and you're hearing all this horrible, horrible stuff, your brain goes to sleep trying to solve the problem, and it makes very agitated sleep. Go on.
I totally agree. It's also important to do it the first thing in the beginning of the day, because it sets the tone for the day.
Yes, it's wonderful.
Because if you start out in gear for appreciation or gratitude, you're going to notice and appreciate and feel grateful for things, because you have that mindset to start with. So, I mean, you can't do it too much, but I think the key times are in the beginning of the day and, as you said, in the end of the day.
I see that it makes a tremendous shift in my patients and in their ability to cope on a daily basis.
There's something else, though, that is really key here, because a lot of people do have hardship in their life,
mm-hmm.
and they may, as we human beings are wont to do, they may be very self-critical of themselves. When people say, I feel like a loser, you know, I feel stupid, I feel too fat, and, whatever, that negative self-talk is gonna undo the gratitude and the appreciation. So one of the things that I teach people in this emotional education program that I have is how to feel compassionate for themselves. Because if you can't feel compassion, then your suffering becomes a weapon against yourself. Does that make sense?
Very much so. But would it be a way to turn off the self-talk? Because there's a voice in there inside of us that said we're not good enough. Oh, no, we can't do that. Other people can do that, or other people can create that in our lives. Not us, or, you know, maybe we're not worthy of really getting this or whatever in our life, or the relationship that we deserve. So is there a way to turn off the self-talk, the negative? It's almost like a negative Jiminy Cricket that's sitting and whispering in our ear things that are disempowering.
Well, as I said before, replacing behavior with something that feels better is easier than just trying to stop something that isn't working. There are a couple of tools to give people. One that I like to do when people are very self-critical is I ask them, would they say that same thing to a child in their life that they love or a close friend? And usually people go, oh, my God, I would never do that. Then they recognize that it's really a painful pattern. For most people, they're so used to doing it that it's like background noise. They don't even realize that it is so disempowering and so, you know, and so disabling. And then imagine what would you say to a close friend who is having your difficulty, or a child that you love, so that it helps them to get a sense of what a compassionate response is. For my own clients, I find it very effective to make audio tapes for them. Usually people can record on their phone of being compassionate. But there's a wonderful person named Panache Desai, D-E-S-A-I, and he has meditations that you can download from the internet, which are very, very loving and soothing, and they're just beautiful. So those are longer than what I usually record for people on their iPhone. So I have my clients use both, because we live in a judgmental, critical society. So we're not used to getting compassionate responses and hearing compassionate responses. If you just watch the late night comics, they're making fun of people who are fat, making people fun of people who are old. So we're used to judgmental reactions to our difficulties, and we're not used to compassionate voices. So wherever you can find them, you know, as I said, I like to record them, or there are meditations on the internet. Joe Dispenza has some meditations to try to, again, replace that negative self-talk with some very concrete positive messages. I also ask people often to write down the positive things that people have said to them, whether it's about their work, whether it's about personality qualities, and meditate and relive those experiences. As I said before, we could replay a criticism forever. We don't replay the positive.
I wonder why. I wonder why. Why would we be so programmed to replay the negative and not programmed to replay the positive?
We're programmed to replay the negative because it is because it went to the amygdala, which is the, you know, fight, flight, or freeze part of the brain. It feels as if we're helping ourselves by replaying the negative that we're going to figure out how not to have that happen again. So I believe all behavior has a positive intent, even if it doesn't have a positive outcome. So we're replaying the negative, one, because it scared us. See, the difference between human beings and animals is that if a zebra, I heard a zebra was infiltrated by a lion, the zebra that runs and escapes, it goes to a safe place, and animals sort of shake their body and they get all the chemicals out, and then in 2 seconds they're grazing. Because they don't have a neocortex that's saying to them, oh, my God, I almost got killed. That might happen tomorrow. So our neocortex now becomes an instrument to replay the fear, because we're trying to figure out how to not have that happen again. If we're not taught how to use that neocortex to replay the positive, and we haven't been taught, that's what this whole movement, you know, I've been doing this since the late 1980s. Now, there are wonderful people, just go on the internet about brain rewiring. There were wonderful people with all kinds of techniques to teach us how to use our mind for the positive.
So it's not just saying, I'm not going to do this anymore. That's very relatively futile. It's replacing that with a combination of mental and physical together to recreate the brain pathway or to support a new pathway. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, I can give you a concrete example of somebody who I work with, a new client who's a binge eater. And so I asked her what her positive intent is, because I believe every behavior does when she's binging. And she's feeling anxious and lonely, and she has these painful feelings, and she wants to feel good. And when she first starts eating the cookies and the sugar and whatever, she's feeling good. And then, of course, she feels out of control and certainly unlovable because she feels so out of control. And so when we worked, I worked with her in that moment to feel her connection to me and my connection to her, which she felt was very loving. And she got to that place of peacefulness without what I call the boomerang. That's what she's looking for. She didn't get that place of peacefulness because her parents were very cold and critical. So when she was a child and she was eating something sweet and it felt good, then she became addicted to the sweets, not because she wants to hurt herself. She was limited in how she could feel good. So when she and I worked together and I was able to make a recording for her, she could play the recording and that create the good feeling in her body, the serotonin, the dopamine, the oxytocin, without the sugar. The sugar has a boomerang behavior. It's intended to make you feel better, but it makes you feel out of control and more unlovable than when you started out feeling lonely and anxious.
Yes, it does, particularly from the fact that the physiology of sugar, instantly when you eat it, up goes the serotonin, but then comes the insulin. It pulls down the sugar as fast as we can because sugar is neurotoxic. It pulls it down, and then the serotonin comes crashing down. Now we need more. So there we are, caught in exactly what you said, a boomerang. We're hitting ourselves in the head with our own behavior. So can you give us,
right,
we've got a couple minutes left, can you give us a couple of behavioral strategies to use over this time that will set us on a path to create some real significant change in our life, positive change in our life? We got about 2-3 minutes.
Well, I think I would kind of recap what I said before. Doing the breathing exercise through the day lowers your stress hormone. If you're less stressed, you're not going to be going into the melodramatic overreaction states that come from the amygdala being triggered. But again, focus on what's positive in your life. Focus on what you appreciate, what you feel grateful for. Focus on, again, loving memories. When I said, you know, if you had a dog when you grew up, that you knew loved you unconditionally. And be patient with yourself. You might not feel anything when you first start to do it. If you have the slightest sensation, like a slight opening up in your chest or a slight lowering of your shoulders, trust yourself. Trust yourself. There's nothing more important than trusting yourself. You will get there. It's a matter of practicing a new way of being and get support for it. Talk about making these kinds of changes. We're meant to be social beings. We need support in order to make change.
Well, that's quite profound and yet simple. So I want to thank you, Helen. And can you give us your website and so our listeners can look up some of the work you're doing?
Right. I have two websites. One is HelenKramer.com, lowercase, and the other is PCS100.com.
That's PCS, Personal Change Solutions 100.com?
Mm-hmm. Personal Change Systems.
Personal Change Systems, PCS 100.com. So thank you again, Helen, and it's always a pleasure.
Likewise, the time goes so fast whenever we do this.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? Thank you, Carol.
And we could go on for hours.
It actually, we've just scratched the surface. But that's right. Intention is, to whet the appetite of people and let them understand their power in this, and then they can go on to create change. It is possible.
I want to
say, have a wonderful, I hope you had a wonderful, wonderful holiday. And I hope you're enjoying and will continue to enjoy the end of this year and the beginning of a new year. Carol?
That's wonderful. I've been thinking about starting my journal on gratitude today.
And I was taking deep breaths as Helen was speaking. Thanks so much, and we'll be back next week. Thank you again, Helen. We're back. I told you it was good. I knew it was going to be good. It's a little bit a beginning of understanding of how to be in control and create your emotion. It's another piece. It's another look. It's another road into taking charge of your health. And that's emotional health. And you're capable of it, even in stressful times, even with family, which is family and will always be there.
That's certainly true. I have decided within the last few years that I'm going to practice kindness. Too often we get our buttons triggered and we have no idea what's going on with the other person. And it seems that we treat our friends that and family that are closest to us the worst. You don't do things with a stranger that you sometimes will do with your family. So I am continuing to keep that mantra, to practice kindness any chance I get. And it makes me feel better about myself.
Well, this is one thing that Helen stated that I think we all can practice, and that's kindness with ourselves. There's nobody on this earth that's more critical of me than I am.
That's true.
I'm pretty tough.
Inner critics that never shut up.
It's little Jiminy Crickets on our shoulder telling us we're not good enough, we're not this, we're not that. So I believe that sharing kindness gives so much satisfaction and personal joy within yourself, but also sharing kindness with yourself can enhance that same feeling, because we're very often very critical of ourselves. But I wanted, in the ending of this program, to, Carol, ask you something.
What's that?
What's your I am grateful for list? Or can you name it?
Oh, first of all, when I open my eyes in the morning, I'm grateful to still be here.
See, we forget that. We forget what a privilege it is to be alive.
And I think for a moment how lucky I am. I have a nice warm bed to wake up in. I'm secure. I am looking forward to a lovely cup of coffee. I sort of plan my day, think about where I'm going for the day while I'm drinking the coffee. I think we really like ritual. Our brains love ritual. Mm-hmm. So they have these little rituals in the morning that include taking a few minutes of gratitude. Will spark your whole day. The same thing is in the evening. To look over the day and look at the highlights of your day sort of leaves it in your mind, and choose to remember and be grateful for all the wonderful things that happened to you during that day. It's a blessing.
When you, as we spoke in the program, when you do it before bed, when you think of your blessings before bed, they repeat and repeat and repeat in your brain. And your brain tries to solve them. So they're creating, in rest, in sleep, positive neurotransmitters. You know, you can't be doing two things at the same moment. You can't be afraid while you're laughing and happy.
Right.
And happy.
Right.
You can't be doing two things at the same time. So if you're you're feeling grateful, it's not the, well, I can't be stressed. I can't not experience this. I can't. No, that's not the way it is. What we're doing is we're replacing rather than taking away. We're focusing on the positive. We're focusing on what works in our life. We're appreciative of, and it doesn't have to be something complicated. It can be an emotion. Your child smiled at you today and liked the meal you made. That you have a child. That you have, you know, simple basics. I loved it when you said, oh, I'm grateful that I can open my eyes. So we're at the end of this program. And if you've been able to hear the program, I know you receive something. There's something special in this program that will help you during this absolutely wonderful, joyous, stressful time. All of the above. And I hope you receive it with the attitude that we share it with you. Now, Carol gave her appreciation list, and secondary to just being alive, my appreciation is for the ability to share this information with you. So, have a wonderful, happy holiday.
I, too, am so grateful for this opportunity to be part of this program with you, Corinne. And I delight in the opportunity to share information. It's all a blessing. And so, happy holidays to everybody.
So,
take charge of your health.
We'll speak with you before the new year. Now, new year is celebration, and that's what we intend to do. Carol, next week, bring a bottle of champagne.
Oh, yeah, we can pop the cork while we get started.
In the middle of the show. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.